Welcome to the Rewards of Volunteering. Your host is Paula Clausen. In today's program, you'll hear about the profound difference you can make for yourself as well as others through being a volunteer. Now, your host, Paula Clausen.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to our second edition of The Rewards of Volunteering. And today I've got an old friend. Well, he's not that old, but a good friend, Rick Hall. Hi, Rick. How are you doing? Tell us about yourself.
I actually am getting older. So because we've been doing this together for a long time. I'm an actor in Los Angeles, but I grew up on a farm. So on a farm, you're always doing stuff with your hands. You have to, you know, somebody can't come out and fix everything every time something goes wrong. So I've done a lot of building and a lot of fixing in my time. So volunteering like this, where we jump in and build a house, kind of comes naturally to me. Although I'm not the best, I'm not a pro, but I can swing a hammer.
I think you do pretty darn good. How many years have you been doing
this? Well, we built our first house in November of 1991. Our church brought a group down. And so we're 21 years, almost 21 years into it now.
My goodness. Yep, I guess I've known you quite a while. We've had some amazing families and a few hitches and... But you've always pulled it off. Do you remember the first family?
Actually, yes. It was two ladies, two sisters who lived together. Genoveva, and I think Gloria was the other one's name. You know, after 21 years, sometimes you can't remember everyone's name. But that was a really vivid memory for me for our first trip, because we didn't know exactly what we were getting into, you know? And I remember when we got to the job site, I talked to the sisters, and I have enough Spanish to basically get myself in trouble. But I asked them, you know, where's the bathroom? And they said, oh, here, come in our house and look. And their house was this little shack, and there was a trash can in the house. And they pointed to it and said, aquí es el baño. And I was like, wow, okay, everybody, there's a trash can that we can use. Luckily, one of the neighbors had an outside john, the outhouse.
Right.
But the ladies were so great, but I was amazed, and it really brought to light just how desperately people need an actual house. We joked after a while that they had running water the day before because a stream ran under their wall of their house through the middle of their little room. Whoa. And the room was maybe 8 by 12, just a shack with a cot in the corner that you'd fold out to, you know, if you had a little kid sleep over. And both the sisters shared that bed and the fancy toilet and had running water under the wall. It was such an eye-opener for us that, wow, at the end of the day, they're going to have a house with a roof, windows, and a door they can lock, and they've never had that in their life.
It's amazing.
It is.
I do remember them, actually. I have this crazy memory that remembers a lot of details, and I do remember those two, and I remember where they were living, and wow, what a difference you made for them.
I also remember meeting you for the first time, Paula.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, who's this crazy British woman running around?
I'm still a crazy British woman running around.
That's great. That's
just great. I hobble a bit more than I run nowadays. But
right.
So
right.
In 20 years, what have you learned from this experience?
Okay.
21 years.
I think one of the first things I learned was to ask people. Our group was very excited when they would get there. Mm-hmm. And there's so much work to do. And we used to build the walls in the United States, build everything, put it on a big truck, and drive it down there, which was its own share of troubles. We can talk about that later if you want to. But when we got there, the first thing we had to do was unload everything off the truck. And people were so excited and so energetic that we were afraid people would get hurt. So the first thing we had to do was slow down. But the biggest thing I learned, and it took me a few trips to get this, was I'm the kind of guy who wants to put on his nail bags and just start hammering nails and going. And if I'm going to be a leader, which I learned the hard way, is I need to slow down myself and not put on my nail bags, help other people get started and organized and make sure this day goes smoothly throughout the day, you know?
That's really insightful. I mean, that's a very good message.
And one of the things I guess a failure on my part was twice people have said to me when they came back from the trip, oh, that was great, but I don't think I need to go again because you don't need me down there. And we do. I needed to get better at giving people jobs, teaching them how to do things safely, and being involved in this build, because the build is not just about getting a house for a family. That's the goal. That's the goal. But
right.
What happens is we have this group of people that many of them never have seen what happens in this country just south of us 3 hours, where it's a different world.
Of course. It is amazing.
And the poverty there is stunning. And how people get by on barely anything, it sure makes us appreciate what we've got. And we're a church group, okay? We mm-hmm. spend time together doing potlucks and sitting together on Sunday mornings and singing hymns. We call that fellowship. But the thing we learned is that, sure, we need to be in church and sing and have those happy times together, but the bonding fellowship of working together side by side, to me, is so much stronger. And then when you sit down together in church together, these are the people that you've done something major with, something bigger than yourself. You're part of a bigger picture. And, you know, in the church, we believe that's being part of God's plan, that you help out others and look after each other.
So is it hard to get a group together in the first place? People who have never been down to Mexico and seen the hardships there? Is it difficult to get those people to come with you?
Actually, no. It is amazing how many people actually want to come. And people will ask me, they'll say, well, I don't have any construction skills. I don't know how to use a saw or a hammer. Well, there's plenty of painting to do. And there's a spirit of working together there that I just tell people, your qualifications, here's what I need for qualifications if you want to go on the trip. Have a good attitude and be willing to try things. And boy, anybody can do that. And we've taken people that are very, very old. We never take kids that are too young because it is a job site.
Right.
And I want to be right. safe. If a young person goes, I always want someone to sponsor them, to keep an eye on them. But we always seem to have enough people. And as a matter of fact, and you've seen this, Paula, you know what I'm going to say.
Oh, I have an idea. Go ahead. Let's see.
I'll say, oh, Paula, I have 45 people coming. And you'll say, Rick, that's too many people. And really, it is. So what we've done is we try and build two houses while we're there. We split our group in half. You've got 20-odd people on each site, which is plenty of people. But we also want to spell ourselves because you get tired during the day.
You get tired.
And when you get tired, you can get sloppy. And I want people to spell each other, tag each other out, and try different things. Oh, here's something. You asked me what I learned. Here's something else I learned is when I slow down and not do things, I can teach people how to do things and do things safely. And one of my favorites was our minister's wife went and the minister pulled me aside and he said, Rick, don't let her use any power tools. And he's not a sexist. He's right. She's not a physical person that can use power tools, but he kind of made a challenge to me. So I took Sarah, his wife, and I said, Sarah, do you want to learn how to use a skill saw? I'll guide you through it. And so she did a very simple cut. She cut a piece of plywood. She got done, She took off her hearing protection, looked up at me and said, "Oh, it's like sewing." And I said, "Okay."
Not quite. Not quite.
Not quite. And I asked Laura, my wife, I go, "Is it like sewing?" And she goes, "Yeah, you cut out pieces and make them fit together." And I went, "Oh." And then I came back and told my minister, and he goes, "Really? She used a skill saw?" I'm like, "Yeah, yeah." I don't think he had her doing that at home.
No. Keep them sewing. Don't let me use skill saws.
Well, and something we do now is we take all the new people who have never been on a trip before and take them and show them what, you know, what a 16-penny nail is, what an 8-penny nail is. Those are the only two kind of nails we use. We explain the basics of the construction so they understand what we're doing, and we go from there. So we've learned some things along the way. And I have to say, the way I learned how to do this was, well, a friend of ours had been on a Project Mercy trip and said, "You guys have to do this." So the associate minister and myself and a couple other folks from the church went down and joined another group and did a build with them and learned how to do it. And we learned so much from them. But one thing I learned that I didn't want to do was they said their goal was to build the house, and they had this system and they got the house built. But what I figured out over the time that I've done this is that it's not just about us building them a house. It's about us building a house with them together.
Yes.
That's the other thing I learned is that, boy, have the family build as much of the house as they can because they want to. It's their house.
Yeah.
They want to say at the end of the day, "We helped build our house."
Right. It's a bonding experience for them as well as for us, for the volunteers.
Yeah. It's like the Amish barn raising, you know, where all of a sudden, you know, a whole group of people take a wall they've built and set it into place and then put the wall at a 90 degree angle at the back of it. And you've got two walls, and suddenly it's not just a concrete slab. It's a house getting built. It's really exciting. We did a GoPro video one day of the house going up, and it was, I watched the video and I'm going, "We're amazing."
I'm glad you realized that. What's the hardest part of the day when you come and build? Do you have any hitches at the border?
Oh, well, we used to bring all the lumber ourselves. We pre-built the week before, and then we loaded everything up on a big truck and brought it over the border, which was its own set of challenges because you had told me they'll charge you a tax for the lumber you're bringing. So bring a receipt, but if it's over $1,000, they may not let it go through. So I always managed to come up with a $998 receipt. Don't ask me how this church guy was able to do that. And sometimes they would say, "Oh, just go, you know, you're doing a good thing." And sometimes they would go over every stick of lumber and charge us a couple hundred dollars in tax. There was no like set fee. And it was always a challenge because I would send most of the group down to start prepping the site. But then the couple of trucks with the lumber on it, we'd hold back. And one time I was trying to be really honest, and I brought a receipt with me for the amount of lumber, and it was over $1,000. And we argued with him, and he said, "There's no way you can bring that lumber in here on the weekend. You'll have to wait till the week, during the week, and go through a lumber broker." Okay. And I had a young kid, a 12-year-old kid from our church named Pedro, and he was translating for me because his Spanish was better than mine. And Pedro is 12, but he looks like he's like 15, 18, maybe even big kid. So this one time we had everything shrink wrapped, you know, wrapped with plastic so it wouldn't blow off the truck. And I said to the guy, tell the guy, if we go back over the border and remove $300 worth of lumber, can we bring it over?" And he said, "Sí, no problema." So we went back over the border. We went to that McDonald's over there.
Yeah.
And we took knives and we cut the plastic off, and that's all we did. And we drove back over, and of course we got the same inspector. Oh. And he looked at our load and he said, "It's the same. It's la misma. And this 12-year-old boy looked at him and said, "Is diferente." And that was not a lie. It was different. He looked at us like, "Okay, I know what you've done here." And then he said, "Okay, pay your tax and get over the border." So he let us go. But one time we did that, and for some reason they wouldn't let us go over with the lumber that day. And there was another group building, and they said, "We'll lead you back to our church in San Diego, and you can park your lumber there and then come back and get it when you're ready to build." I didn't even know who these people were. And they took us to some church, and we parked our truck in the back lot and locked it up, and then went back. And we ended up working down doing other jobs, which I'll get into the time we didn't have lumber to build a house, what we ended up doing. Actually, I'll tell you now. We poured concrete foundations for another house.
You did? You poured the concrete?
We helped, and it was the hardest day of work we ever had.
Wow.
Because in the States, when you're going to pour concrete in the United States, what do? You call a concrete truck, and they come over, and they unload 10 yards of concrete, and you spread it out, and you're done in a few hours. No, mixing by hand. It was the hardest we have ever worked.
That must have been in the early days. I remember.
Yeah.
Well, we had an old cement mixer, and sometimes it would break down.
Right.
And trial and error, and a lot of problems with the slabs. Thank heavens we've gotten over that now. But you really had to work that day. That is a tough job.
Yeah. Yeah. So back to the lumber we parked in San Diego. So when we got down to the job site that day, we were helping doing these other jobs and pouring concrete. And the lady who we were supposed to build a house for, she came up to me and she said, "Where's the lumber?" And I told her it didn't make it. We couldn't get over the border. We'll come back later in the week and build her house. And she looked at me with such... It just broke her heart, and it broke my heart too, because I could tell she thought they're not coming back. And on Thursday of that week, we got 12 people, we got the lumber, and when we pulled into the colony there, the Colonia, and she saw us, she started to cry, and we started to cry.
No.
It was just so emotional. And we built that house. Oh, every house it's a moving experience,
right,
to build a house for families. And at the end of the day, when you hand the keys to a family who's never had keys to a home before, I can't put it into words. It's just amazing.
Right.
But that day when we built the house for the lady who thought we wouldn't come back, it was a powerful experience for everybody. You know, right. Transformative.
How did you get all this started, Rick?
Well, it started just in our church, Church of the Valley and Little Brown Church. We're basically one church together. And we had plenty of people that wanted to go. But then over the years, people have moved on. Our minister went to another church in the area. Two of our ministers, one went to San Diego, one went to Burbank. And now we have five different churches that go on the trips together. That's why we have so many people.
Right.
But yeah, it's a big group of people, and it's a bit of an organizational challenge to get that many people from that many churches together to do one job. But we never are at a lack for having volunteers. There's always plenty of people who want to go.
Are there other benefits for doing the volunteer work apart from building a house for the family? What benefits do the volunteers get in return? I mean, obviously they must feel the friendship with the families and their gratitude, but what does it do for them?
Well, you said the friendships with the families. To have a family down in Mexico that you've worked with all day, you really feel bonded to them. And it helps you have an understanding that 3 hours south of us are people living in poverty. And it's poverty like we haven't seen before. And that's an eye-opener for our people. It was for me, and I thought I understood, but to actually see it and to work with these people, for them to have names instead of just being those Mexicans, okay? And I say that without sounding, trying not to sound racist, but it's easier to objectify people when you don't know them. And when you get to know them, you realize they're, as the church would say, they're part of God's family, and we're all part of that family. And the difference, here's a difference. In the church, we give money to the church to do things. And we believe, we have faith that good things will happen with that money. And that's what faith is, right?
Right.
But when we do a job for Project Mercy, everybody in that trip knows exactly where every dollar is gone. I like to call it direct results ministry, where we can see what we've donated to, how it changes lives immediately. And certainly we need times when we just give our money and we know something good is happening with it. But every now and then it's so nice to be able to go back to our church and go, here's what the donations you did, you gave, here's what they did yesterday. And here are the names of the peoples whose lives you changed. And here are pictures of where they lived before. And it's, the conditions are terrible and what they moved into. And sometimes in the past, I've gotten criticized, why don't you build houses in the United States? Well, we can build with Habitat for Humanity and things like that, but we can't do the work like we do in Mexico. We build a solid, safe house for a family in one day.
Right. And that is amazing. It amazes me even after 30 years that I've been doing this, and I'm still amazed at the end of every day. And when I see volunteers and team leaders such as yourselves handing over the keys to the family who are crying mainly in gratitude, it's heartwarming. And this is why we do it. This is why I do it, because it's a win-win situation. I receive just as much from them as they receive from us in a different manner. Of course, they get a house, but it fills me up with gratitude and joy to see a huge difference that one can make in one day. And you're right. If people don't go down, they don't know the situation the people are living in. These are, I call them our neighbors in need. They're just, you say, 3 hours drive away. They're only an hour from where I live and just a half an hour across the border. And I'm just eternally grateful to everybody that we can make this difference.
Oh. You know, something, one time, can I tell a quick story about going down?
Oh, yes, please. You have the best stories, Rick.
Well, I thank you. I have.
I mean, they're experiences, but you really managed to tell the story of that experience. I think it's wonderful.
Well, I'm a storyteller at heart.
Yeah. So.
We went down one time, and we were building our house, and a fairly young woman came over and asked if we could build her house because the lumber was there. And this was before we were ever building two houses in one day. And I said, oh, I'm afraid we can't. I don't know if we're going to get this house built, which we always got the house built. But I said we couldn't. And she was so disappointed. And she walked away. And another lady said to me through a translator, that woman you just talked to, her house, her shack that she was living in burned down last week. And her baby died in the fire.
Oh.
And boy, a switch went off in me, and I got together some of our group, a handful of them, and I said, let's go build this house as much as we can get built today. Let's go build this house too. And it was our first time to ever try and build two houses in one day. And we didn't get it all the way built, but we got four walls up. We got the windows up and we got the door on. So the building could be locked up with everything inside and somebody could come finish it. And that was one of the most satisfying days. And yeah. that mom had been through tragedy, and to have hope, you know, it was important. As a side note, okay, there was an old woman with an open fire burning pieces of lumber and stuff, and she was cooking something in a pot, and she was stirring it with a stick. And I thought, man, I don't know what's in that pot, but I don't know if I'd want to be eating that. And at the end of the day, they came out and they said, mole for everyone. And it was the cooking that she had been doing all day. And I didn't tell anybody. She was stirring it with a stick. And it was the best mole I've ever had. And it was fully cooked, so nobody got sick.
No.
Although one time, oh boy, I'm just going and going. One time, the family, they came out and they said, we have horchata for everyone, which is rice water, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, you guys, we shouldn't drink this. And I tried to tell the family and they just kept saying, horchata, para todos, horchata. And so I took a little sip of it. I'm like, oh, me gusta mucho. It's very good. I like it. And then we did not drink it, but a few people drank it. 24 hours later, I started getting calls from everybody. Are you sick? Are you sick?
And oh my gosh.
About 10 of us got we went on a liquid diet, we called it. Nobody got too sick, but oh man, we learned a lesson about
Water down there is not the best. So
no.
And that may have been in the days before people actually bought water, which most people do nowadays. They've got the potable and the non-potable. Yeah, I seem to remember that story. It was, I felt very guilty, which is probably why I haven't said anything to you about it. And it's like, oh, no. Oh, no, it didn't. Oh.
Well, you asked me what I learned, and that I learned that
not to drink the horchata.
No me gusta horchata.
In a restaurant, fine, but not out in the boonies where
right,
we were.
Right.
That's right.
One time when we were bringing the lumber ourselves, I somehow forgot all the rafters. And so we got to that part of the building and we didn't have any 10-foot 2x4s. And so I went to a local lumber yard and he had a whole pile of 10-foot 2x4s. And looking through them to find the 24 straight ones we needed was really a trick. But we got that house built. And then I remember I said, can I use a credit card? And he said, okay, no plástico, no.
It is a different world. But they're proud. And as far as I'm concerned, that they're very respectful. Is there anything else about your volunteer experience you'd like to share? I mean, not just with Project Mercy, but the other volunteer work you do?
I do quite a bit of volunteer work through my church and in my neighborhood when people need something. I like being involved and I do a lot of it, but Project Mercy has given me a way to focus that energy and contain it, because you can get, if you start volunteering too much, you can kind of burn out. We go twice a year. We take a big group. It's a challenging, hard day that is fulfilling and focused. We have one mission. Although our second mission when we're down there sometimes is to have fun with the kids that come around. Because a lot of kids come around and boy, you get them painting, and I'm sure their mothers when they come home are like, why did the Americans pour paint all over you? It's like
the biggest party for those kids. It's
right.
Yep. It's like, whoa, they're here. Let's go paint.
Hey, kid, try and get some on the wall, too, not just yourself. One of my daughters went once, and she was scared to go You know, she didn't know anything about it. And she worked hard, and then she ended up hanging out with the kids. And she was about 12 then, and she really bonded with these kids and, of course, wanted to take home a dog and all the things that a kid wants to do. But it was such an eye-opener. And to see my daughter understand, oh, this is what Dad does a couple times a year. And I'd been doing it since she was a baby. She's 20 now, 22 now. So all of her life, I've been going on these trips a couple times a year. So it was good to see my daughter learn something, you know?
Yeah, fulfilling. Mm-hmm. So I can't thank you enough for sharing all this with us. But before we call it a day, how do you think the pandemic has changed people's volunteers' opinions and desires? Are people anxious to get back, or are they wanting to keep more space?
It's a little of both. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go down and build a house and just be safe and wear our masks, and we're getting vaccinated now. But I have talked to some people who are just not ready to do it yet.
Right.
And that will be a gradual process. But the reality is, and I don't say this lightly, but we're usually not at a loss for having people to go on our trips. And people will, so we'll have enough people to go on the next trip, which we hope is this fall.
Yeah. And I'm planning on it.
Okay. Save us a wall or two.
Yeah.
Or four. And I think people are ready to get back into it. I hope they are. And the thing is, I've also encouraged our church to go ahead and donate to Project Mercy, because lumber was still being bought and walls were still being built in the States. And so in the spring, I know we sent some money for at least most of a house. And that makes us feel like we're still part of, that's why I can say we're coming up on 21 years of the ministry, because even though we couldn't take a trip last fall or this spring, we're still involved.
That's right. You're still sponsoring.
There you go.
Helping. Right. And that's as much as we can ask for. We are planning and hoping we can get back to regular construction again in the fall, and inviting all our friends to come back down and help these people that have been put on the back burner for a year. And we'll keep our fingers crossed and hope for the best.
Yep.
And is there anything else you'd like to share before we say adios?
I'm sure glad you have supplied this opportunity for us to do what we feel like is what God would want us to be doing, the work of helping others. And without any thought about who they are or where they're from, but just seeing their need and being able to help. And there's a lot of times in life when you can't really help people, you can't help them the way you wish you could. And that one day we go is a day of helping, and we know it is what is needed.
Well said. Okay, everyone. Thank you, Rick. And I'll talk to you again soon, hopefully.
Adios.
Adios. Thanks.
Thank you again for listening to The Rewards of Volunteering. Please join your host, Paula Clausen, again soon for another edition of the program on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about Project Mercy, please visit our website at projectmercybaja.org. The Rewards of Volunteering delves into the whys, wherefores, and outcomes of volunteering, both spiritual and concrete, for all involved. Compassion should lead to action driven by a desire to make a difference. When you invest your time, energy, and a belief in making a difference in the world, you walk away with pride and fulfillment. When you see your contribution lift people up and give them a better life, it's awe-inspiring.
We'll examine the backgrounds of diverse volunteers and leaders, where they came from, why they volunteer, and continue on this path. Project Mercy has worked with hundreds of volunteers from diverse walks of life for 30-plus years. They're unified by a desire to help devastatingly poor families living just south of the U.S. border, literally in our own backyard. The volunteers help poverty-stricken families build their own home so they can live in safety and security. We'll introduce some of these volunteers and donors so you can hear their stories.